The goal of this series in general, Halacha Meets Modernity, is to talk about the halachic process, how poskim deal with new developments, some of which are physical discoveries, like what we're going to talk about in terms of the Tcheles, some of which are developments in terms of cultural values. So we're going to talk about in 2 weeks the topic of patient autonomy, which is so popular in the secular world, and how it has come into halacha calculations. And then the third one that I'm going to do in this series, week five of the series, will be reacting to the chote, reacting to the sinner, and the challenge in the Jewish world the last couple of hundred years when for somebody to say, I'm not observing halacha, wasn't simply, it wasn't binary, either you observe halacha or you don't observe halacha, but now it became, I have a movement, I have an ideology which says halacha means this, and I have an ideology that says halacha means that, and the question of how our poskim, how our halachic authorities have dealt with those realities. Those are my three in the series. Rabbi Ziering has his own three, as you can see on the flyer. I would tell them to you, but I don't remember what they are at the moment. But that's what we want to deal with here is not so much what is the ruling in a particular case, although we're going to be discussing, obviously, halachic issues, as much as to talk about how halacha deals with new information. And I should note, the shiur tonight is dedicated by Dr. Ira and Shirley Martyr in memory of Rav Shlomo, Rav David Sabovich, Alav HaShalom, whose yard site was today. Okay. So the Tcheles issues. I thought I would give some background material on the general history of Tcheles. Obviously, you know the pasuk in Parshas Shlach, the Sulam Tzitzis, you're supposed to make Tzitzis, and you're supposed to have a Psil Tcheles, a thread of Tcheles. There is a lot of great debate among the Rishonim, which we don't need to discuss in this shiur, about what exactly that means, a string of Tcheles, meaning how many of your strings are supposed to be Tcheles, how they're supposed to be tied, is it the blue going around a bunch of times? That's its own discussion. If you ever get a chance to pick up, I had a book that I picked up at YU 1996-97, which is a book in which your wife's uncle features prominently, called The Renaissance of a Mitzvah. On Tcheles, Sarah Schechter has an article in there, which he's also published in other venues, on the different debates about what exactly you do once you have the Tcheles, how you're supposed to wrap it. But Tcheles at some point in history disappeared. It is unclear when exactly we stopped using Tcheles. We know that in the time of the Amoraim, so you're talking about anywhere between the beginning of the 3rd century to the 6th century, Tcheles is still there. The Gemara Menachos Daf Mem Gimel has a description of it, and Amoraim buying it, and so on. The Medrash Tanchuma on Parshas Shlach says we no longer have Tcheles, all we have is the white. Medrash Tanchuma was published somewhere between 400 and 600 of the Common Era. That's not to say when its sources come from. Its sources are pre-publication, obviously, and could be centuries before that. But it's published between 400 and 600 of the Common Era. What the Nitziv writes in his Hamek She'ela on the Shildos is that by the time of Rabbi Chai Gaon, author of the Shildos in, I believe, 9th century or 10th century, he says Tcheles is gone by then. And your wife's uncle, Baruch Sturman, has more discussion of this. The Medrash Tanchuma is earlier.
Yeah, totally.
Right, so Ellie asks, I don't understand, why do you need the Nitziv to tell you that it's gone in the 9th century if you already said the Medrash Tanchuma says it's gone earlier? And the answer is that it seems like it actually disappears in different places at different times. It isn't a flat where everybody wakes up one morning and Tcheles is gone. It isn't a flat, it's gone in this, it's gone here, all simultaneously. It really does appear to have disappeared in patches. And that's tied into the question of why it disappeared. And I want to show you just some of the opinions around about why it disappeared, some of which affect the way that halacha looks at the rediscovery of Tcheles. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source number Aleph. The first answer that we'll bring is from the Yeshua's Malko. The Yeshua Shuas Malko, writing in the beginning of the 20th century, he was a correspondent of Rav Gershon Henoch Lehner, the Radziner, who sought to resuscitate Tcheles, and we'll talk about that later. But the Shuas Malko says, "Bedoros harishonim shel Amoraim," in the early generations of the Amoraim. So you're talking 3rd century Common Era. "Shechashu ledas Rabbi dema'akvin ze'edzeh." They followed the view of Rebbe in the Gemara, who we'll see later on, who says that if you don't have the tcheles, you can't fulfill tzitzis at all. What we do, right, or what those of us who don't use the tcheles do, of having all white, they say, is not fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis. So he says, in those generations, the Amoraim, who were concerned about Rebbe's view, they had to endanger themselves to get tcheles, so as not to halt the mitzvah altogether. Because the pasuk says, this is Rebbe's view, that you need the tcheles for all generations, and anytime you don't have the tcheles, that's it, it's gone.
So it's a problem then that we're wearing dark hats, no?
Yes, that, according to them, it's problematic. If you're just wearing white, you have a four-cornered garment without tzitzis on it. That's correct. So he says the problem was that they were endangering themselves in order to get it. He doesn't explain here why it was dangerous. We'll see later why it was dangerous. But that is his explanation. He says, "Amnam bedoros achronim," in later generations, "shehukba lahalacha detchilas v'lavan ein ma'akvin ze'etzeh," was established as law that we don't follow Rebbe. And in fact, you can just have white strings and your yotzei the mitzvah without the tcheles. Uledoro samanemar betzitzis lo nemar ela al halavan. When the pasuk says you have to have these strings for all generations, that means white. It doesn't mean you have to have the tcheles also. Some chusay depended on that. Came and sheish chashash zakana betchelik. So it was dangerous to have tcheles. So the position of the Yeshua's Malko is that we stopped using tcheles because it was dangerous to get it. Which logically would have been in different places at different times when it became dangerous. Why was it dangerous? So so one explanation is based on the Ramban in Parshas Tetzaveh. The Ramban writes that Romans prohibited wearing royal colors. You were not allowed to wear colors associated with royalty. And so because of that, it was dangerous to wear tcheles because that was indeed a royal color. And that's one idea that's suggested. Another idea, if you take a look at Beis, comes from an article by Rabbi Chaim Twersky of Chicago called Identifying the Chila Zone in the Journal of Halach and Contemporary Society. And he says the best estimate is that the loss of the technology of the tcheles dying process and or the identity of the Chila Zone, he doesn't think it's because of danger. It's because they forget how to do it or they lose the technology. He says that was a consequence of the Arab conquest of 639 CE, or perhaps the result of the Christian massacres of 628 CE, something which would again be localized. The Rav Herzog, who we'll talk about more later on, the second chief rabbi of the state of Israel, who was a chemist as well as a halachic authority, goes with the view that it's the Muslim conquest in the year 638. Moshe Tendler says cost was a factor. It simply became a very expensive thing. We know in the Gemara already in Menachos that Tcheles was extraordinarily expensive. There's an alternative view.
So the cost and royal garments and all that were reasons, but then it just got lost.
Well, then they stopped using it. Not necessarily lost, but stopped using it. In other words, they say eventually when you stop using something, then a generation or two later, no one has it. And at that point, we forget and so on. Sorry?
They might have imagined not doing it. It's a skill. The dying is a skill.
Well, the process, but also the identification of the chilaza, to be able to say definitively this is what it's supposed to be. An alternative view is that we actually lost information. The Rambam, in his Perush HaMishnayos in Menachos, says, "Ve'eino etzleinu ayom," it's source number 3. He says, we don't have it. "Lefi she'ein anu yodim tzviyaso," because we don't know how to die in. "Lefi she'ein kol gavan tchol betzemer nikra tcheles." He says, not every tcheles like color is tcheles. Ella tichlos, or tichlos misuyames, he says a particular color, she'ina efsharit hayom, which we can't do today. Ulefichach anu osin alavan levado, so we just do white. The Radbaz in source number 4, I'm not going to read it out just in the interest of time, but I brought it for you on the sheet, says, we don't know it. that's his problem. He says we are not familiar, but in the days of the Gemara, they certainly were doing it.
We don't know what the color or the
with, so in his case, the we don't know the chilazon. If you go to the last sentence in Dalet. We don't know what it is. We don't know how to trap it. Right? It's hard to catch snails. They go really fast. So all sorts of different explanations, and the proliferation of different explanations itself tells you that something isn't quite right here. No one has the answer that everyone's going to accept for what happened to Tcheles. So round one of Tcheles in the modern era is actually the Radziner Tcheles. So I brought for you in source Hay, Rav Gershon Henoch Lehner, the Radziner Rebbe, at the end of the 19th century, says, this mitzvah has been lost for too long, and it's a great merit to resurrect a mitzvah like this, so I'm going to resurrect it. He says, "V'gam anochi be'onyi, I too, in addition to others, apparently, hechilosi bazeh v'shalachti leglilos yamatichon." He said, "I started on this, figuring that it is good." He writes right before this in Tmunei Chol, one of three works of his on Tcheles. He said he writes about the importance of resurrecting a mitzvah, and then he says, "So I decided I was going to send around the Mediterranean." Vehuvali habria, and this creature was brought to me. Vehimi minim hanikraim degei hadio. It is of the species known as ink fish. Ubalashon Ashkenaz, tint fish. Tint like in English, right? In German, he says it's called tint fish. Sheish ben kitisha asar minim. There are like 19 species of this. Venerali shebem in echad mayem nimtu kala simanim. And I think one of them has all the signs. Now, you'll ask me, what was he talking about? It's a kind of cuttlefish. If you flip the page to test above, if you use the ones that I sent you in the email, then you'll see this in color, where it's much more impressive. But the one on the left,
you can see that the at our Ripley's Museum.
Yeah,
it's quite a weird looking thing.
Okay, this was what he felt was the source of Tcheles. This fishy looking creature was the source of Tcheles. He felt it's called the Sepia officinalis or something along those lines, depending on how you pronounce Latin. But in 1887, that's what he develops, and he writes these three books, recording his views and the views of others who dialogued with him. And his Hasidim start wearing it. I knew a Red Zinner Hasid when I came to my shul in Allentown. There was a fellow there by the name of Joel Firestone, and he was an old time Red Zinner Hasid, a survivor of the camps, and he had the Red Zinner Tcheles.
Why did you think
So that's what we have to get to. But not only did he do it, but the Breslovers, interestingly, started wearing it as well. Because there was a tradition from Rabbi Nachman that Tcheles was going to be resurrected in 1887. So, lo and behold, it's resurrected. So his argument was, first of all, that even if you're not sure about the dye, you should use it. This is an interesting point in general, and very important for the discussion about how we deal with discoveries. It's Tcheles specific in this particular note, but he said, you should do it. Why? Because Tcheles is a biblical mitzvah. And we have a rule. Safek d'oraisa l'chumra. Right? If you're not sure about a biblical matter, you should go strictly. Strictly means I should go out, buy Tcheles, and put them on my, tzitzis. Now, the truth of the matter is it's not so clear cut. Why is it not clear-cut?
Would it be a problem if it's not real in terms of would it invalidate
Right, so one concern, which we'll have to come back to in a moment, is that actually you could be doing something wrong by using it. It isn't like this is a neutral thing to do. If it's wrong, it may actually be a problem.
You could get into Shana's issues if you're not careful.
Well, I mean, if you're really not careful.
If you treat it like it's real Tcheles.
Correct.
And it's not real Tcheles, you're allowed to do Shanes.
Correct.
And if you're wrong here, but that's not Xeris.
Right. I mean, no, there was at one time such a concern, and it's brought in Shulchan as a potential consideration for somebody to wear wool strings with linen garments out of concern that maybe they're going to have the wrong dye and then it won't be fulfilling the biblical tzitzis, and therefore they shouldn't be able to end up wearing Shanes. There is such a concern. But more fundamentally, take a look at what the Chuvas on Hagos brings in source Vav. He's quoting the Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the original, the on this point, he says, "Ukvod kacho ha'admor miradzin zatzal tan shesfeka del raisehi v'lama lo nachas shakapanim besafek letzavo betchelis." He said, "Look, doubt on a biblical matter. Why shouldn't I try to fulfill the del raisa? The heishiv ha'grid mi bris zatzal the emosay amrinan sfeka del raisa l'chumri." He said, "What does that mean to say? When you have doubt on a biblical matter, you should rule strictly." Rak im kishay yekayim ha'mitzvah achshav misafek yete bevadai chiyuva. What that means is, I am not sure whether this is a biblical thing, whether this will be a fulfillment, but if I do this act, then I for sure will have fulfilled my obligation. I'm not sure whether this is necessary, but if I do this, then for sure I will have fulfilled my obligation. For example, I ate a meal to the point of being full. I have a biblical obligation to bench. Can't remember whether I benched or not. Never happened to anybody I know. But Lu Yitzuyer, there was somebody who was an amnesiac, and he isn't sure whether he benched or not. By benching again, he will know for sure that he took care of his obligation. That's your suffix. All right, so you have doubt about a biblical matter. You go strictly, so you do. Or, there's a mitzvah blowing shofar. I'm not sure which way you blow shofar. So I'm going to blow shofar all the different shitas, all the different ways, and that way I'll know for sure I fulfilled my mitzvah. But said Rav Soloveitchik, Avokan gamim yilvash tcheles misafek lo yatsa midei safek. Here, you don't know that by wearing this you're actually fulfilling anything. The kiyagan alarmin and sveka daraisa lachumra. He said that's not an application of safek daraisa lachumra. This actually seems to be not Rav Soloveitchik's invention. It's found in the Prima Gadim and the Eshal Avram Kufsadi Dalad Gimel pointed out the Redziner, and the Redziner said that's all well and good, but you're getting too technical on me.
What's the svara?
Well,
right.
Well, he's going to come to explain how he thinks that this is a tcheles. But his response is, you're getting too technical. You have a biblical mitzvah to perform. This could be the way to do it. What do you have to lose? Even if it doesn't fit the letter of the law of how Safek Daraisa L'Chomer works, why wouldn't you want to fulfill a biblical mitzvah? That's the argument that the Redziner made back. And further, he said, having the wrong color won't disqualify your tzitzis. Based on the Gemara in Menachos Lamechesim et Aleph, source Zion, that's the debate about whether you must have the blue and the white or not, in which Rebbe said you need to have both, and the Rabbanan said you don't need to have both. But what's very clear there is that even if you have the wrong color, you're still Yotze. Now, others had concerns. The one concern was the concern about Shatnez Tzitzis. The Gemara Menachos Memalef voices that concern, that people who think they have the right tchelis will wear wool and linen, because you are allowed to if you have the real thing, and they won't have the real thing. That's one concern. The Yeshua's Malko had a second concern in Source Ches. He wrote a series of tshuvos, a series of responses on this issue, and in this piece here, he says, "Omna mashikasav od lo ye ela speka." This statement of, well, it's only it's doubt on it. Even if it's only a doubt on a d'oraisa, still you should do it. He says in the second line in Source Ches, "Vada yafakasav." He says he wrote correctly, "Ki achulo nifsal al pidin," because it won't be disqualified. Ela sheachar she'ein lanu yedia berura shezet tcheles, but we don't have clear knowledge that this is cheles. V'daz gedola Yisrael she'ina nignas, and the view of the gedolim is that cheles was stored away, meaning that we don't have it, and we're going to come back to that idea. V'she'ein anu mechuyavin betcheles, and we have no obligation to wear cheles. There's no mitzvah, he says, and again we have to come back to that as well. So ein lanu lahaniyah chavada yulahachmir misafek. Why leave the definite, which you know, the white is fine, and be machmir on people to make them get this thing that might or might not be? But then he says, "Eini omer kablu daiti." He says, "You don't have to accept my point of view. And if you want to wear it, you can wear it. I'm not going to tell you to get rid of it. You know, I don't want to start a fight over this issue. And maybe they're really right. But the Yeshua's Malko's view is, you're creating a chumra for society. That's what you're doing by having people wear this chelas." And then the last concern against is the Tshuvos Van Hagos.
And you didn't read the last three words.
Yeah, the Efshe Shemes Notzei Hagula. Well, that's because he says that they've said it's stored away until Mashiach. So maybe this is Mashiach. So he wrote. He didn't even have a medina. But in source tests, Rav Shternbach and the Chuvos van Hagos points out an additional problem. This goes back to what Daniel, I think, was saying before. He says, you know, what about Baltosif? If you hold that by wearing the tchelis, this dye, but it's not really tchelis, if you hold that by using this blue, that's the way you fulfill the mitzvah, he argues, maybe there's a concern for Baltosif for adding to the Torah, because he created this new mitzvah that isn't really there, because it's actually the wrong dye. So he argues. Frankly, I'm not so sure that I'm with him on this, just because it's not the way Baltosif usually works. You're trying to fulfill an existing mitzvah. You're not trying to add. You're not trying to create something new. You think this is what it is. But the upshot of this, and what I wanted to show you here...
Then you colored them purple, yellow, green.
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
So from the pure perspective of are the tzitzis valid, the answer is they're fine.
No, because you don't think that's a mitzvah.
Because they don't think they're doing it as a mitzvah. They just think, you know, I'd like to wear green. As a matter of fact, the Gemara talks about wearing specifically tzitzis strings that are colored the same color as the beged. We wear white. The Torah doesn't say to wear white. We wear white because the garment is white. I actually, when I was in Israel last month... Baltosif is definitely linked to intent. Yes, without a doubt it's linked to intent. They talk about it for somebody who sits in a sukkah on a day other than the day after Sukkot. And if he sits in a sukkah, you know, today, he may be crazy because it was cold, but that's not Baltosif. But if he says, I am fulfilling a mitzvah by doing so, then he's over Baltosif. So yes, there is such a concept of linking it to intent. But I was in Israel last month, and one of the yeshivos that I visited there, they told me they were actually making tzitzis for soldiers. Someone wants to donate a whole bunch of these combat-friendly tzitzis, and the garment is camouflage green, and the strings are camouflage green. Not as tchelis, as, you know, safety. Because they actually have problems when soldiers are wearing white strings and they come out of their bag, and that totally ruins the camouflage effect. So, because the idea is the string should be the same color as the baguette. But in any case, what I wanted to show you here is the Raziner discovery causes a whole tumult about this, and some of the debate is really unique to Tchelas in terms of, is it a suffix to Oraisa, and, you know, can I apply that here, and is it bad if you have the wrong color? And then there are arguments in favor of the discovery itself. If you take a look on your sheet at Source Yud, this is a key Gemara. Here are your criteria. Tanu Rabbanan, Braisa says, you want to know what the Chila zone is? Chila zone is Zehu Gufo Dome L'Yam. Its body looks like the sea. Uvriyaso Dome L'Dag. And in its Bria, which generally is translated as its form, it looks like a fish. Va'ola Echad L'Shivim Shana. It comes up once every 70 years. And you use its blood to dye tcheles, and therefore it is expensive. So when you look at this tint fish, this kind of cuttlefish that he had, which you can see the picture of in Tezvav, so in terms of having color like the sea, this creature actually is able to camouflage itself to look like the sea bottom. It's one of those sea creatures that can actually alter its color. It looks like a fish. To me, looks like a fish. And again, if you have the digital version of the sheets, you'll see it better because there it's in color. But it looks like the sea. It looks like a fish, I should say. It doesn't come around once in 70 years, but it definitely has cycles of being sparsely available and then more available. And I'm going to come back to that point in a bit. There's a Mishnah in Kalim which says that a chilazon is a hook. And the tentacles of this creature actually have hooks. And they don't use the blood. They actually use a secretion from it. But the Ritziner said, that's okay. The blood can be read as a secretion. And the truth is, we'll see a Tosfos that says that also. It's not the Ritziner's invention. So that's his basis for saying that this is Tcheles. So some argued with him and said, but Tcheles was put away. It was nignaz, not it disappeared because of Roman decrees and Christian and Muslim conquests and people forgetting. There was actually a determination of we should not have the tchelis anymore. whether because it was dangerous, or whether because it's for the time of Mashiach and it's too holy for us to use now, or for whatever reason, it was actually put away. That's the argument that was made. So the Radziner said, nonsense. Take a look at Yud Aleph. He says, Nisbar mikama duchtish lo nignas klal. He says, it's clear from various sources that no, it was not put away at all. Vishesman rabachar korban metanon vamoram hayolem tcheles. They had tcheles for a long time, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which is when people pin the putting it away on. They say it's lost with other things with the Beis HaMikdash. He says, nonsense. They're doing it through the period of the Amoraim. And he says further, the Efshar Karov Levadai Shagama Rambam Zal Hayelo Tcheles. It's possible and likely, in fact, that the Rambam had Tcheles. His reason for saying that is that even though we saw in the Parish of Mishnayos that the Rambam said, we don't know how to dye it. If you look at Hilchos Tzitzit Perbeis Halacha Beis, which I brought you, I believe, on the sheet in source 23, Chav Gimel, the Rambam writes how you dye Tcheles. Don't be confused about contradictions between the commentary to the Mishnah and the Mishnah Torah. That happens from time to time. He's much younger, remember, when he writes the Parish of Mishnayos. He's, I think, 30 years old when he writes his commentary to all of Mishnah. Oh boy. But the Rambam seems, from Hilchos Tzitzis, he seems to, in fact, know it. There are Gaonim who write about its use, and they don't write in general on theoretical issues. So the argument goes, it was not put away. The Ari said that it was stopped after the Churban. But the Radziner says, what that just means is that with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it stopped being available for people at large. But the Radziner said there was no intentional putting it away, and therefore it's possible to rediscover it. Right, it's not that's not his proof from the Rambam. His proof from the Rambam is that the Rambam describes the process for dyeing it. It sounds like he must be familiar with it. Yeah, he must have seen it. Yeah, no, the Rambam isn't the one who he's talking about. He's talking about like the Rif, or the Rav Chai Gaon, or people like that who generally deal with halacha lemaisa, and they discuss tcheles. So there were many who disagreed with use of this discovery, but for a variety of reasons, some of which are very important to this shir. We already saw some who said, you shouldn't use it because if he's wrong, you shouldn't use it because it's baltosif, because it's creating a chumra for people. But there were three substantive arguments regarding discoveries that were brought that I want to highlight here. Number one, there were those who said the signs you're employing don't match your fish. In other words, they argue the discovery on its merits. In principle, they're fine with the idea that you can discover something new and it could be a revolutionary thing within halacha. They just think that you have the wrong fish. The Rav Hillel Moshe Meshel Gelbstein was among those who made this argument. He said, I've seen your cuttlefish, I've seen the dye you produce, and it doesn't look like the sky. And also, the Rambam writes that it has to endure in the fabric, and it doesn't last well in your fabric. That was that was one argument.
Which one is that?
Rav Hillel Meshel Gelbstein. It's not on the sheet.
Oh, okay.
I can give you a link for it, because I found it online, but I didn't bring it. In general, don't look to see which sources I brought to try to determine who I favor. The answer is, when it comes to my source sheet, I favor sources I can cut and paste. I retyped a few that I felt really had to be here, but generally speaking, the publisher wins. That's the way it works in halacha.
The argument could be for the technology that was lost. That's why he doesn't endure.
Whose argument?
The
Gelbstein. Yes. No, he says it's wrong. He says if you had the right one, it would last in the fabric and the color would match the sky. Because remember, it's supposed to remind you of the sky. So maybe we're doing it wrong. Maybe. I mean, the answer from the Radziner is that it does look like the sky. So there. And it does last in the fabric. So there. The Rav Herzog came along a generation later. Rav Herzog, remember, he's in Ireland, and then he comes from Ireland to become the chief rabbi in Israel. He writes his master's thesis on this chemistry issue. It was called Hebrew porphyry, P-O-R-P-H-Y-R-Y, which is a word that I think he basically invented for the purple. Well, purpura is a word.
It's purple.
Yeah. Right, but applying it here to the study of... Right, and all based on this dye, I would assume.
No, the dye... No, the word means purple.
I'm not saying he invented the term porphyry. What I'm saying is the application to the study of this treles thing is, I think, his thing. But he actually takes the Ritziner treles and he has it analyzed in two different labs, and they conclude that the dye that's being produced is not coming from the cuttlefish. Not coming from the cuttlefish. Rather, the process is that they take this secretion from the cuttlefish and they add chemicals to it. And what they concluded was that the synthetic chemicals they're adding to it are interacting with the organic material in order to create a dye that they call Prussian blue, which was known to them. And their argument is that you can take any organic material and have it interact with these material, with these chemicals, and you would get this color. It isn't about what this fish is producing at all. That was the that was one school of thought here against the Ritziner. So they accept the concept of discoveries. They just think he has the wrong discovery. Contrast that with a second school of thought. That's the Yeshua's Malko, who we've already seen, who said, why do you want to create these chumras for people? We don't need this. And that's basically his approach. In his first tshuva on the matter, he said, white is kosher, so why do you need the strife, and why do you need the problems of telling people that they should now use something different? And in his second tshuva, which we saw before, he says, I acknowledge that having the wrong color won't disqualify it, but again, he says, who needs it? And then in tshuva gimel, in source Yud Beis, he says, Umasha Kasavdem, you wrote to me, the Hatfilin Shal Rosh, Ein Ma'akvin Es Shal Yad, Va'afilu Achin Izhar, and Bechola Echoles Beshal Rosh. This is an inane argument. They almost feel like he made it up in order to beat it. He says, you wrote to me and asked me, when I say you're fine with the white, why do you need the blue? People have said to me, well, you're fine with the Shal Yad, why do you bother to get a Tfilin Shal Rosh? So he says, Tema. He says, I'm shocked that you even asked that question. There is an obligation in our day to wear a tefillin shel rosh. But he says, when it comes to tcheles, the Ari's ruling was, you don't have any chiyuv to wear tcheles today. When we said they stopped using it, it means there's no mitzvah. You can use the white, and you are just fine. Not a bit the evidence of the chatzchila. That's where the Yeshua's Malko understands it.
So maybe they're going to close that is to conservative Judaism.
What do you mean?
Things change. So what says so in the Torah? Things change.
So the second approach, I'm going to make it larger than the tcheles issue. I'm going to make it larger than the Tehillah issue. Leave aside the Ari's point. But the overall approach of the Yeshua's Malko is, things are fine the way they are. Why stir things up? You have a mitzvah. This is why people do the mitzvah. What are you giving people a headache for?
Nowadays, he would be like shot down by all these chumrotic...
He would be against any chumrah. It's not just this. He's against chumros in general. That's true. Unless you have a basis in halacha to explain why it should be required, he's not interested in trying to satisfy every single thing out there. The third opposing view is the approach of the Beis Halevi. We already saw a point of the Beis Halevi regarding Safek D'Oraisa. The Beis Halevi said, you need a Mesorah. You need a tradition. If you want to resurrect something that hasn't been practiced in 1,000+ years... you're going to need better than arguments for logic about, yeah, this makes sense. You need a tradition. However, there are two different records of what the Beis Halevi said, and which version you have matters a great deal. In Source Yud Gimel, I brought you the Ritziner's quote of the Beis Halevi in his Ein HaTcheles, which was, I think, the second of his works. He says, Hagaon HaBeis Din Kadosh Brisk, right, Bristolita, Shayichya. Masar Kaltama Venimuka Bidvarmi Uno Bemitzvah Hatchelas Achemi Yudainu. He says, the Brisker, meaning, again, the grid, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi, gave his explanation for why he rejects this Tcheles to one of people we know, Sheyichta, for him to write it down. But Yom Alana Mishmo Bezeh Alashon, he told us, in the he said to tell us the following, Im Nomar Ki Hadag Haya Bimitzius, if you're going to tell me that the fish was always around, the Gam Hotzas Tziv O Haya Yadua Bechosman Meazmanim Sha'avru Alina Meishapaska Tcheles Mi Yisrael, and we always knew how to get the dye from it. if they knew what was a chila zav, and they knew how to process it, v'im kol zeh lo lakshu avoseinu v'avos avoseinu, and yet they didn't wear it, hareyu ki ilu yesh lanu bekabala u'mesorah me'avoseinu ki zeh hadag v'tzivah v'einenu achila zon v'atcheles. So he says, that's like having a negative mesorah. If they didn't use it, that's proof that it's wrong. Otherwise they would have done it. I don't care how many signs you have. That's what the Radziner records in the Beis Halevi's position. That's an easy one to diffuse. Because the Radziner says, I can answer that. We didn't have the chilazon. And we didn't have the process.
In other words, the goyim didn't have it.
That's an easy one to respond to. They didn't have access. There was no conscious statement of not using it. However, Rav Soloveitchik in Shiurim Lezecher Abamari has a different tradition of what it was that Rav Yosef Dov said. I'm going to say it outside of the text. You can see it there in Yudalid. He said what the grid actually said was, you always need a mesorah to restore something that hasn't been done. He's not saying the fact they didn't use it is evidence that this is wrong. He's saying it doesn't matter whether they knew about it or didn't know about it. The bottom line is, you can't resurrect a practice based on logic. You need flat out, you need a mesorah, and he brings a pasuk to support it. Shal avicha v'yagedcha zekeinecha v'yomru lach. You need your av, you need your zakein, in order to tell you about which items are supposed to be used. It's not something that you can do logically. So what you have are three different negative approaches, right? One approach is, discoveries are fine, argue them on their merits. Your second approach is, why in the world would you start trouble? I don't want you to go after discoveries. And the third approach disqualifies discoveries altogether and says discoveries don't help. You need an actual mesorah. Yeah?
Doesn't much of the Gemara use logic to reconstruct things?
Yeah, so this argument is a really funny argument. The argument that mesorah is needed in order to establish mitzius, in order to establish the reality of what you're going to use, is very difficult to sustain.
Especially if your downside isn't that you're being trained. It's just like, maybe it's not right.
Well, that's the... I mean, I wasn't going to get into the kosher bird discussion. That's its own can of worms, so to speak. But I'm going to come back to this in a little bit, because we have to come back to how it's applied when we deal with the current round. We're still in the Radziner Tchelis. We're still 100 years ago. As a side note, Rav Herzog put forth his own candidate, a snail called Janthina. I'm probably mispronouncing that. But if you take a look at the pictures in Tesvav, that's the one that's on the opposite side of the Radziner one. The other one with a dark background. And again, you really have to look at the original. It has this beautiful purple color to the shell. It's very nice looking. The key point that I want to draw is these three different approaches that you hear. One approach is the Radziner himself, as well as Rav Gelbstein, as well as Rav Herzog, accepting discoveries but debating the particular one. The issue is Malko saying, don't pursue them. They might be correct, but you don't need them. And then the approach of, I don't care what you discover, it ain't going to help you. So now let's fast forward. The Murex trunculus, also known as the Hexaplex trunculus. So it is also a snail. It's the middle one in Tesvav, with a pretty looking shell, and it produces a clear mucus from a gland, and when you expose that mucus to oxygen and to sunlight, the color changes to something that looks like what you've seen. I mean, you've seen people wear them. You have a nice, rich blue. You haven't seen people wear them?
No, I think your description is matching with...
Yeah.
You mix them in solution, expose that to light, that still doesn't look anything like blue.
Yeah,
it's yellow.
It's the sunlight.
When you put the wool in, you pull the wool out and pour water on the wool, then the wool turns blue.
I think the sunlight itself is sufficient, as I understand it.
It doesn't look blue in the beaker. It turns blue on the wool.
If they left the beaker out, exposed to the sunlight, it wouldn't?
When it comes out.
I think it only turns blue on the wool.
That I have not heard. Could be. The articles that I've read have noted that chemically this secretion is actually very similar to plant indigo, which is a point in its favor. Because the Gemara talks repeatedly about something called kla'ilan, some kind of a plant product which you could not visually distinguish from tchelas. And the concern in the Gemara's time was that people are selling phony stuff and calling it tchelas. This thing is almost indistinguishable. It's different by like two bromine atoms from plant indigo. So the indigo actually goes through a range of colors before it settles on the blue. It's purple at one point as well. This murex was actually known as a candidate long before the modern era. It had been suspected since the 17th century. They found these large dye-producing facilities along with murex shells all along Israel's coast in the end of the 19th century. Reb Herzog knew about it. Reb Herzog did not endorse it because he said the creature doesn't look like the sea. It's a shell. And the shell, the colors of the shell don't look like the sea. Number two, he said it isn't available every 70 years. Number three, as he was familiar, sorry, neither is his. Yeah. The dye, at least as he was familiar with it, from the murex, doesn't endure in the fabric. It fades. And number four, the dye is purple rather than blue, like the sky, and like kla'ilan. So what happened to generate a new discovery? Well, in the 1950s, Yigal Yadin found ancient fabrics in the Bar Kokhba caves that were dyed with kla'ilan, with plant indigo. And it matched the color of the murex blue. And in fact, as I said, the dyes are chemically very similar. So that's number one. Number two, also in the 50s...
It matched the color of the murex blue?
Once you had the exposure to sunlight. The kla'ilan matched the color, yeah.
They didn't know about the sunlight till the 80s.
No, but this is what they did with what he had found from then.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's why he did it.
Yeah, they don't actually develop Mahon until the 80s. Okay. They also found in the 1950s Iranian fabrics in Siberia, going back to 400, 500 before the Common Era, and they're dyed with murex, which seems to show that they were using murex at the time as a dye, and that the dye was color fast. Right? 2,500 years is a good long time for the dye to stay. They also discovered these murex shells by the thousands that I had already mentioned in these ancient dye production facilities. They found a coin from Bar Kokhba's time with a murex shell depicted on it. Now, I have to say, I looked in the Renaissance of a Mitzvah book at a picture of the coin, and if someone offered me $1 billion to find the murex shell on that coin, I couldn't tell you that that was a murex shell. But they told me that there was a shell, the picture of a shell on this Bar Kokhba coin. And the argument of the supporters of the murex as tchelas say, why in the world would you put this lowly snail shell on your coin unless it was something that was used for something particularly Jewish? To which the response from the other side is, because they were crushing them and using them for some kind of a dye, they were critical to all the economies in the area, it was something of substance. It's like you'd put some produce, local produce, on your coin also. Same idea. But that's the debate with that. So in the early 80s, Otto Elsner and Ehud Spanier are the ones who discover that if you leave it in the sunlight, it will turn blue. They argue that that was what was done in ancient dyeing techniques. And then in 1985, they find a flask from 1300 or 1200 before the Common Era in Lebanon with particles of dye that they say are identical to the murex dye. So that's part of what yields this big discovery. Beyond the discoveries themselves, they look at ancient writings, including the writings of Pliny. If you take a look at the natural history excerpt in source number 16, purples, as he calls them, they're called purpura in modern Hebrew, the murex. So then that's the other porphyry related.
So what is the source from?
Pliny is 2nd century, I believe. I think he's 2nd century. Purples live mostly 7 years. Like the murex, they keep themselves in concealment for 30 days, about the time of the rising of the dog star. Okay. In the spring season, they unite in large bodies, and by rubbing against each other, produce a viscous spittle from which a kind of wax is formed. The murex does the same as the purple. These are subspecies. The murex does the same, but the purple has that exquisite juice, which is so greatly sought after for the purpose of dyeing cloth, situated in the middle of the throat. This secretion consists of a tiny drop contained in a white vein from which the precious liquid used for dyeing is distilled, being of the tint of a rose, somewhat inclining to black. The rest of the body is entirely destitute of this juice. It is a great point to take the fish alive. That's going to matter. For when it dies, it spits out this juice. From the larger ones, it is extracted after taking off the shell, but the small fish are crushed alive together with the shells upon which they eject this secretion. So the argument goes, you have a dye that becomes blue with exposure to sunlight. It is color fast. It has a shell. The Gemara in Shabbos Ayin Hay talks about how this chilazon has a shell that gets crushed. The Chavos Yair, Rav Yair Bachrach, had an essay that he wrote, which was only published after his death, in which he actually identifies the murex in the 18th century as the chilazon. As do others. And that causes a big debate. I brought it for you in Yud Zayin because of the local interest. Halacha Brura. This issue of Halacha Brura was called the search for Tzpeles. The name of the author was not on it. However, in place of the name of the author, it said, reviewed by Rav Shlomo Miller. That's the name of the author. So, in it, he writes regarding this piece from the Chavos Yair, passing halachic rulings based on Kisva Yados manuscripts discovered long after the author lived is itself quite dubious in the eyes of the poskim, as the authenticity and integrity of each word is questionable. This is even more so in a situation such as ours, where such a Masorah ought to have been mentioned elsewhere. Sorry? Well, sort of he is. But at least he's saying don't trust a manuscript that turns up that says that it's the murex, because it was after the Chavos Yair was already dead. Yeah, they don't trust such a manuscript.
Uh-huh. Does the Ritziner address the fact that the Warren Shabbos says that it also has a shell?
Right, so I don't remember him addressing that. I don't remember him addressing that question. I'd have to go back and check and through three books. not that long, but still. The Minchas Asher of Asher Weiss also doesn't like going based on the Chavos Yair, because he says we don't know that what he called a murex is what we call a murex. Maybe there are different names for these subspecies. Not to mention, he says, and this I think is a very important point, if the Chavos Yair knew what the chilazon was and he chose not to use it, goes back to, again, the question, right, if you didn't use it, does that show that we don't trust it or that something's wrong with it? But the approaches to the new discovery largely mirror those that were brought the first time around with the Ritziner Tzeles, with an added fourth from Rav Asher Weiss. So you have some who argue it on its merits and say discoveries could be legitimate, but we're going to debate the merit of their specific proofs. So in the interest of time, I'm going to condense here, but you see the sources on the sheet, and I hope that you'll take a look at them. One argument is Tzeles was put away, and therefore it can't be that we have real Tzeles now. Mm-hmm. Not possible. We have a Gemara
there's a Medrash, which I thought I brought on the sheet, but I'm not seeing it.
That's strange. I think I did them out of order. Yeah, I did them out of order. Take a look at Chaf. The Sifri in Vizos HaBracha, Rabbi Yossi says, I once went from Kiziv to Tzur, and I found a certain elder, and he told me he made his money from Chilazon, and I said, is it still found? And he told me, yes, it's found in such and such a place, but you can't get to it because you'll get bitten and stung if you do it. And I said, Rabbi Yossi, that you see that it was put away for the tzaddikim la'asid lako. So one of the arguments is, it's also in the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah in Source Chaf Aleph, it was put away. It's not meant to be found. So you can't possibly have found it. The Aruch HaShulchan in similar language, the Aruch HaShulchan in Source Chaf Beis wrote about the Ritziner Tzeles that nobody went along with it, and he said, it's gone. Ad ki yavo, go el tzedek, b'mehera b'yameinu amein. He says, we don't have it, we're not going to have it until Mashiach's time. Eli, what?
I said we have tzaddikim today.
Okay. That's the argument against. To which the response comes that, number one, many authorities seem to say it disappeared because of practical reasons, not because someone put it into Geniza, as we saw in the beginning of this year. Number two, the Maharil explicitly said that Tzeles could return, as did the Radbaz.
To which Rav Asher Weiss says, okay, so you have a couple of Rishonim you found on your site. That doesn't mean that you're not going to renew a Masorah on that basis. But one question is, was this put away never meant to be restored? A second argument within this realm of arguing on its merits surrounds the physical traits. You can't see the color of this of the chilazon here. In fact, you only have a picture of the shell. But it doesn't look like the sea. So what do I do with the fact that it doesn't look like the sea? So your wife's uncle, Rabbi Sermon, in his article in the Renaissance of a Mitzvah, says it blends in with the seabed because it's covered with small organisms. And the organisms are the organisms that cover all the things on the seabed, and therefore it blends into the seabed, and that's what it means when it says domeli, that it's domeli yam. Halacha Brewer does not like that, but that's the argument. The question is raised about the Rambam's language. The Rambam in Chav Gimel talks about using the blood, the dam, the blood of the chilazon, and he describes the blood as being black like ink. Murex blood is transparent. So what do you do with that? However, Rav Herzog already dealt with that question. And Rav Herzog's answer was that the Gemara is not talking about the blood, it's talking about the secretion. He had the same issue with his candidate. And he said it's only talking about the secretion, it's not actually describing the blood. Another question that's raised is, your snail doesn't look like a fish. And it doesn't look like a fish, it's a snail. However, the response is to look at Rashi in Source Chav Dalet. Rashi on the word chilazon says tolat. It's a worm. And it's not the only place that we find such a such an idea. Another argument is it doesn't come up every 70 years.
But it just, Rashi is just contradicting the Gemara, that's all.
So it appears. But if Ivor Rishon is willing to say that,
yeah,
that's good.
He must have a bar, he has a different source.
Yeah. He has it, and there are others who say it. It's not only Rashi. Rabbeinu Shimshon, the Rashi Shatz also says tolas. The another argument is that it doesn't come up every 70 years.
It's an easy answer. It's the
Fuzma. Yeah, right. Like a fig tree. You know, you plant the fig tree, and in 70 years, you're with the you know, talk about with Rip Van Winkle. You know who I mean? No, it's not Chamish Gamzu. Not Chamish Gamzu. Choni Ma'agel. Thank you. It's Choni Ma'agel that he goes to sleep and he wakes up and the tree is. Yeah, he first says to the fellow, "Why are you planting this tree?" And the whole, you know, the story. However, number one, the Rambam doesn't mention the 70 years as an identifying factor, and number two, Rav Herzog himself said the 70 year things is just indicates scarcity, and the Ritziner said the same thing. Basically, everyone who has claimed to have some candidate for the chilazon has said 70 years is not literal. It means that it's really scarce, and suddenly you'll get it. Yeah, maybe. That's why it's expensive, right? The Ritziner said it's meant to be an explanation for why it's expensive. There are also those who argued regarding the process of dyeing the wool. The fact that the dye doesn't come from the blood. However, this I noted to you before, Tosfos actually says already, it's in Source Chavei, that the chilazon has two different liquids. One is blood and the other is a secretion. So what we're using is a secretion, and that's fine. We can use the word dam for that. Another argument is that in Source Chavav, the Gemara in Shabbos Ayin Hay says to take the dye while it's alive is better. So what we do now doesn't seem to differentiate between whether it's alive or dead. So Rabbi Sturman responds by saying that in their technology, there was an enzyme in it that would break down within hours after death. And so for them, it mattered that you get it while it was alive. With our technology, it's not such an issue. To which others disagree. I brought you an article by Dr. Mendel Singer, also from the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, in Chav Zayin, who argues that doesn't help because the Gemara is talking about moments after death.
How does he know that?
Hey, the language of the Gemara does sound like you really want to get it immediately.
I don't see that at all.
If you take a look at Source Chav Gimel, I think that's... I'm not Chav Gimel. Chav Gimel was the Rambam. If you take a look at Source Chav Vav, it does sound like it, because if you take a look at the end of that Gemara, Shani Hacha, they're dealing with whether it's a psik reishi or not. The kama de is be neshama tfei necholei. as long as there is some life in it, that's better for you to get the dye. Gich de leitzel tzive, so the dye will be clear. Though you get a good color out of it. It does sound like it's closer to when it's alive. The Menachas Asher is upset because he says the original process, as detailed in the Rambam, never says anything about exposing it to the sunlight. So he says if sunlight is such a main factor in this, he really should have said so. But these are all fundamentally arguments which have accepted the concept of discovery. They're just arguing fine points. Does your discovery fit or not? But they're open to the idea that discoveries can revolutionize the way we practice halacha. As opposed to the second argument, which is who needs new discoveries? And the Menachas Asher brings that here. I liked the way that he phrased this. If you take a look at Source Chav Ches. Oh wow, we're really late. Okay, I'm going to say it outside. I like the way he said it, but he makes the argument of you're trying to fit every siman to make it fit, and to say, well, 7 years is not literal, it doesn't have to be while it's alive anymore, and all that. He says, why are you straining to try to fit everything into the signs? It's not like a bas kol came out of Shemayim and said, this is it, and now I need to retrofit my gemaras in order to work. Just say, so this isn't it, or I don't see how it could be it, and move on. The third argument is the Mesorah argument, which is brought by some as well, that there's a need to resurrect a Mesorah. The response from our Moshe Tendler is exceptionally strong on this. He's not the only one. I brought you Rav Chaim Twersky as well in Source Lamed, just because, again, his I could cut and paste. But the argument that he makes is the goal of a Mesorah is to prove this is it. It's not that Mesorah is different from evidence. It's just really, really strong evidence. But if I have really, really strong evidence because I have found murex from a couple of thousand years ago in these factories, and I have found this proof and that proof and that proof and this argument and that argument, it's just as good as having a Mesorah. Their response is, Mesorah is not qualitatively different from evidence, it's just really good evidence. So if my evidence is really good, then I'm fine. And Rabbi Twersky's argument here in Lamed is, we never require absolute certainty, or we wouldn't wear tefillin. We wouldn't do all a bunch of things, because you can never have absolute certainty. You do the best that you can. That's his argument. But I wanted to show you the fourth and last argument in this set, which is new, I think, in this generation. The first three arguments we saw with the Ritzin already. The fourth argument from Rav Asher Weiss is that discoveries that are governed by scientific argument don't meet the threshold of halachic proof, because the scientific method is deficient. The scientific method is, I have a set of data, I come up with a hypothesis that satisfies my data, so until somebody can disprove my hypothesis, that's what I'm going to work with. That's the scientific method. There's nothing wrong with it. That's the way science works. Whether you're dealing with medicine, whether you're dealing with archaeology, whether you're dealing with any field of discovery and development. So his argument is, that's well and good in science, but it isn't good halacha. When it comes to halacha, he says, you need proof. So when you have all of these different arguments to explain your discoveries to show that it's teles, I can come up with other theories, he says. For example, Pliny identifies the species. So he says, I don't know, we've been passing down our texts of Mishnah and Gemara with great care and love for thousands of years, and yet there are manuscript errors. So don't you think there could be a manuscript error in Pliny's natural history? And who's to say the murex is what they had? Or he says, you claim you've discovered murex processing operations, that those are treles. Maybe they were making some other dye out of the murex. Who's to say that they were making treles out of the murex? In fact, he says, treles was very expensive. So presumably, whatever they were doing with these plants, with thousands and thousands of shells, was something less expensive, because it was very common, that which they had. You're going to tell me that you found treles materials you're going to ask me if it's true that these materials and these factories were not producing treles, then where are the treles factories? So he says, well, once the Romans decreed you shouldn't have them, clearly we must have destroyed them in order that the Romans shouldn't come after us. Or maybe the Romans themselves destroyed them. And maybe the Romans established these other ones with the murex in order to mislead people, because they didn't want people to use treles. And so on and so on. My point is not whether you believe any of the individual arguments. His point is not whether you believe any of the individual arguments. His point is that the way you judge your new discoveries has to be by a halachic standard, not by a scientific standard. The scientific standard is very comfortable relying on the best theory currently available to explain the data. And he believes that that's inadequate as a proof. And that's something that I think is new with him. I don't believe I've seen anybody else make that argument. I don't know that I am comfortable with his argument from a halachic perspective, because, and this goes back to what you had said in the very beginning, Daniel, is that really true? Meaning, in aguna situations, we certainly do rely on, I wouldn't call it guesswork, but we come up with a hypothesis that explains the data, showing that the man was here when the plane went down or when the towers were hit or whatever it was. And on that basis, we'll allow an Esh Es Esh to get married. Right? We do use guesswork in areas of halacha. So maybe you'll distinguish between determining halacha and determining its application to the physical material and the mitzvahs. Maybe you can make an argument, you know, one way or another. I'm not sure. But fundamentally, these are four different approaches to dealing with new discoveries. As promised, I did not paskin anything on Tcheles, and I believe you should ask your shul rabbi. But fundamentally, these four different approaches, I think, are interesting, providing insight into how we deal with new discoveries. Rabbi Ziering will speak next week. The following week, I am back with the question of new cultural values, social values, the issue of patient autonomy in medical ethics. Thank you very much.
Thank you.